Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Monday, March the 25th. Lots to get into today, and a lot of it has to do with New York, what's happening in New York with our politics. So joining us today is our good friend from New York, the one and only Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, it's great to have you back. How you been?
Well, I haven't been all that well recently because of some weird illness that I think is probably a foreign plot. But I'm glad to be back too.
Well, I thought what you were going to tell me that it was global warming that got you down.
Well, that's part of everything. You know, we know that. I mean, no matter what it is, global warming is involved.
Yes.
I mean, I walked outside a month ago and I was felled immediately by the global warming. I just had to run back inside.
That's right. Or like now they say La Nina or whatever that is, some kind of
yes.
A Pacific climate or something. But anyway, it's great to have you back because I thought your timing was great to have you today because of everything happened in New York. I mean, it seems like New York had a very busy news day. The local news must be pretty exciting. But let's begin with one that it's not directly about Trump, and that is the U.N., The U.N. took a vote today condemning, I guess, calling for a U.N. resolution,
yes.
Basically telling Israel to, you know, stop shooting because, if you keep on shooting, you're going to make the terrorists more angry, I guess, than they are.
Yeah, it's pretty much the logic of the U.N.
Yeah, right.
But
the United States did not participate, Bill, abstained. Incredible.
Well, we're a weak nation, and we're seen as a weak nation around the world. I mean, people don't hesitate to attack us or insult us. You have a man in the White House who has no business being there, and he is, I think, surrounded by people from the Obama administration who don't even like their country. I think we're in a terrible, terrible situation. As far as the UN is concerned, you know, there was a campaign in the 1970s to get the UN out of New York. I mean, it was Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was our UN ambassador, made a speech at the UN saying, you know, if you want to leave, if you don't like being in the United States, I will be at the shore waving to you and waving goodbye. And Carter fired Moynihan. He was more interested in the approval of the dictatorships in the UN than he was in the approval of his own UN ambassador, who was a wonderful ambassador
right.
for the United States. It was one of the reasons that Carter went down to defeat a few years later in the 1980 election.
Absolutely.
People really didn't like him. He was preachy and thought he was better than everybody, which he was not. But the UN, I have no idea why we allow the UN to be in the United States. It's an embarrassment.
Right.
The UN isn't the organization they dreamed of in 1945. Today it's controlled by a bunch of anti-American, anti-Semitic clowns. The not Attorney General, but the Secretary General is a fool, and it gets nothing really done in terms of peace.
Right.
It's the people on the outside who do the peace. I think we should tell the UN to find another headquarters. They can go to some, garden spot of the world like Bangladesh, and we can use that building for the purposes of bettering New York or bettering America.
Well, it would make a wonderful hotel. I think that
would,
building
yes.
is a very nice hotel, great view of the river there. So it would be
yes.
a wonderful hotel, top of the, you know, restaurant in the last floor. It would be a great
yes.
place to. But, you know, somebody said this. It's not my original line. I love to take credit for it, but it's a great line. that we pay 75% of the budget or 25% of the budget and get 99% of the criticism.
Well, that's it. It's controlled basically today by Muslim nations. There are 57 Muslim nations. They're the largest bloc of the UN. I think every one of the Muslim nations is a third world country, which may tell you something about the Muslim bloc and what it stands for. And we've just been taken for a ride. The American establishment is very pro-UN and the deep state. And I see absolutely no reason why it should be in the United States. I don't mind us being a member of the UN,
right?
Just to be there. But I am embarrassed every time I pass the building that we are allowing the anti-Americanism and anti-Semitism to go on there. And the only thing these people seem to do is to go out and have steak dinners.
Right. Well, that's why I think the best way to kill the UN bill is to move, and we can pay for the building. We can pay for the construction of the building,
yes.
But we should move them to Diego Garcia, you know, that island in the Indian Ocean. And it's sort of in the middle of nowhere, which means nobody can say that this or that, and put them out there. They've got a big airport. They've got a big beach. And, you know, we can actually pay for the building. We can actually maybe build a few apartment complexes, put a couple of restaurants there and we can have two or three flights a week to London or whatever and get, but I mean, in all seriousness, I agree with you. I think the UN is a joke. And if there's ever been an argument for the Electoral College, it's the UN. Because the idea that a country with like 2,000 people should have the same voting power as the United States, I mean, forget it.
Yes. Yes. Well, that's it's completely silly. Now, we are on the Security Council as a permanent member. There are five permanent members, their permanence having been established in 1945. Let's see if I can remember the names of all five. Well, it's the United States, United Kingdom, France, Russia, and China. And that is some combination of nothingness. I mean, the idea that a country like France, which is basically today a smaller and weaker country,
right,
should be a permanent member. But that's from the old world. I mean, sure. We established the UN in 1945 based on principles and based on observations, from the previous century. Any permanent member can veto a resolution, and we have used the veto. The idea there was stability, that the old world countries would still run the world, that they should be the ones to do it, because besides them, the countries that were available were not in a position to lead. But my feeling is that they probably do some good work around the world in food supplies and things like that. Let them do that, and we should have an international community of democracies, countries that must be democracies, must meet certain standards of human rights, and then maybe we will have the equivalent of the UN that will actually do something.
Right. Well, we can invite members. You know, people
yes.
can be members by invitation.
Right.
And these democracies, like you say, can invite members. And now, of course, we've tried that with NATO, and some of them are not paying their share. But,
that's right.
You know, we can... But I think a point you made, I think is very interesting, is that alliances from 1945 may not be as relevant in 2024. If you think of how much time that is, that's 55 plus, that's 79 years, more than half a century. So, I mean, alliances don't necessarily, or mutual interest doesn't necessarily last that long, Bill.
No, it really doesn't. And I don't recall any situation in terms of war and peace where the UN ever played a useful role, except for the Uniting for Peace resolution in 1950 that allowed the UN to go to war against North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that passed was the Russians were boycotting the UN that week, so they didn't have their veto. But so when we sent troops to Korea, they actually were flying under or fighting under a UN flag, which may or may not have any value, but we thought this was the beginning of a new order where countries would unite you know, for peace and would unite to stop aggression. Well, I think that was the only time.
Right.
I mean,
well, and the intentions were noble. I give him credit for that. I mean, I think you're right. The intentions were noble. I've seen, you know, every once in a while, on this day in history, they come up with, you know, on this day the UN was formed. And I think the intentions were noble. But the problem is not all the countries are noble. So you end up with a good organization, but not a very noble objective. But I understand the Israelis are not happy that we were on vacation today, Bill.
Well, they weren't because the resolution went through that it was one that they hoped we would veto. And, you know, look, there's a strain between Biden and Bibi Netanyahu. One can criticize perfectly legitimately some things that Israel might have done in this war that some can disagree with honorably. But Biden is so – he's such a small-minded man. I mean, that he wouldn't meet with Netanyahu at the White House. I don't – plenty to say against Netanyahu, but he is the leader of one of our most important allies. And in terms of the Defense Department, possibly our most important ally, because we develop a lot of technology with Israel.
Right.
But the pettiness – that pettiness comes from Obama. I mean, it comes from that
yes.
element of the Democratic Party, which is contemptuous of American allies, which was contemptuous of Great Britain, and really, with the fact that we might reelect Biden, to me, is catastrophic.
Right.
How low do you get?
No
I mean,
idea.
The man is senile. And the attempts to get Trump out of the race through the use of the judicial system, which has never been done in American history, and that people are okay with it. Well, the press is okay with it. They're okay with anything that advances the political left. But,
right.
You know, we really are in trouble as a nation. We're in trouble internally and externally, and the Joe Biden is not the answer.
No, and the reality, Bill, is that your external problems can go away if you can fix your internal problems. We learned
that
from Reagan in 1980 when he came in a pretty chaotic situation back then with President Carter. But I think that one more note on President Biden and Israel. We talk about a two-state solution. I think at the White House what they're seeing is Michigan and whatever the other state is.
Nevada,
yeah. I mean, that's where they're seeing this is their two-state solution. They got to get Flint, Michigan. They got to make sure they win that city, Bill.
Well, he's going for the terrorist vote.
That's right.
I mean, they, people are now laughing. I mean, even inside the Democratic Party, that he put so much emphasis on the Muslim vote in Michigan, which is, you know, a larger percentage than in most other states. But the mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, which is where the center of Muslim activity is, the mayor of Dearborn is openly pro-Hamas. So I said, they're going for the terrorist vote.
Right.
And he didn't realize that this might upset the second most loyal constituency in the Democratic Party, which are Jews. And there are a heck of a lot more people who are pro-Israel than there are pro-Hamas.
You're right. And there's a tradition, too, Bill, of the Democrat Party – in Israel. There's a long tradition going back to Truman. They're risking that. Now, as long as we're talking about foreign policy, Bill, I mentioned to you off the air that I think national security is going to be a huge issue, which may very well dictate who becomes vice president under President Trump. But there's also a very bad situation with Russia, this terrorist attack.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like with this administration, Bill, foreign policy is almost like a daily issue, something always going on with the world in this administration, Bill.
Well, and we turn against our allies. And I mean, we have given some material to Ukraine, which is under attack from Russia, but we haven't given a lot of the materials that they really need. I'm watching General Keane, whom I admire greatly, on television saying we haven't even given them yet the F-16 fighters that they need. And it takes so long for the United States to material there they're really stalemated now in eastern Ukraine between the Ukrainians and the Russians. But the Russians can eventually wear down the Ukrainians. It's such a large country, Russia. And we are not, even the Republicans, I have to blame them as well. We should be zealous in our contributions to Ukraine. We may not love Ukraine. We may not love the government of Ukraine. There may be a certain amount of corruption and stealing going on. There probably is. But we must not allow Russia to win. Then you are enabling them to dominate Europe again. And you would think that the people in Congress would accept that argument. At one time, the Republicans did, but they seem to be getting lukewarm. And the Democrats, you know, they really don't care.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party is controlled by people who probably wouldn't mind Russia winning.
Right.
I mean, we are in bad shape.
We are in very bad shape. I tell you, very bad shape. I agree with you.
Yeah. And we are seeing our college campuses exploding with nobody wants to ask the question, who are these people who are really tearing down our college campuses?
Absolutely.
I will bet that you will find they are mostly foreign students. And the reason that they're there, especially in the Ivy League, is the colleges make a fortune on those students.
Mm-hmm.
They pay full freight. Their government pays. They don't pay it themselves. Their government pays it. So they have all these foreign students paying full freight instead of getting scholarships. The countries themselves usually make a contribution to the universities. Apparently the universities are cleaning up on this stuff, and they are taking money from dictatorships.
Absolutely. No, I think that's becoming more and more evident all the time. Well, you mentioned President Trump, former President Trump, and he was also in the big news today in New York.
Yes.
The biggest case, of course, this incredibly, unbelievably stupid case where the $500 million, I guess they shot it down to 100 and whatever, to 100
yes,
million.
Yes, the court, he actually won a big court decision.
Yeah, and I still think 100 million is ridiculous considering the fact that
yes.
nobody got defrauded. But at least it's not $500 million. But
they can't find a victim.
That's amazing. You know, pretty soon they'll put an ad in the paper saying, we're looking for a victim. We'll give you $5,000 if you say you're a victim.
Yes.
You know, we'll have
yes.
a big show on TV. But even the other case with the other lady who was claiming that she was raped by
I must tell you, I will make this comment. I know about that department store in which the incident apparently is supposed to have happened. Bergdorf Goodman is on 57th Street in New York. It is right across the street from Trump Tower. Donald Trump, during this period that they're talking about, was one of the best-known people in New York. His face was familiar to everyone. Walking down the street, everyone would know Donald Trump. The accusation is that Donald Trump got into Bergdorf Goodman, which has top-class security, got into a women's dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman, the face that is so well-known, raped a woman, and then got out safely, even though everybody recognized who he was.
Right.
I mean, this is crazy stuff. I don't know who would believe something like that. He claims he never even met her, and I believe him.
Well, Bill, what makes this case even more interesting is the fact that I think for 30 years she was peddling the story and nobody would buy it.
Nobody
a single lawyer took her case because they all thought it was crazy. And then all of a sudden these, you know, I guess somebody put up the money to hire a law firm. And you know, then they also changed the statute of limitations, which I think really insane. Because the statute of limitations is to protect the innocent, like I think Trump
That's
is
right.
in this case.
But
that, and then, of course, the other case, the fraud case, I think, you know, to use the expression, Bill, the straw that broke the camel's back, I think those cases
think so.
In New York may have been the turning point, and that's when the American people said, this is crazy. This is crazy. We're going to vote for Trump because this is crazy. Now, and it's not because they love Trump necessarily. But when you combine this kind of craziness, this crazy use of the legal system, plus a Trump presidency that looks better and better all the time compared to a Biden presidency. I think that's your formula. That's why he's leading in the polls, Bill.
I think that's true. And also they're going to then come down to the Georgia case, which, I mean, they can't even get started down there because there's so much corruption. And then there are several other cases that they want to try, and the one in Washington, which is, a sure conviction, they are trying to get a conviction before the election. And I have to say, I think it would be a terrible thing. It would be a disgrace to the country because the whole thing, when you look at these cases, all five are in cities within a few miles of the Atlantic Ocean. You know, it's a big country, America.
Right.
And all of them are hack Democratic Party prosecutors or Department of Justice for a man who will be Trump's opponent in the election. And the whole thing just is awful. The appearance is awful. It is like a third world country, a banana republic.
You know, Bill, if you were the director, a director in Hollywood, and I came to you with a script that was, you know, like this script, what's happening to Trump, and I would call the show Banana Republic Cases, you would probably turn it down because it's too silly.
I would turn it down because the stories can't be believed. I mean, Donald Trump, the famous Donald Trump with that face, gets into a women's dressing room at an exclusive New York department store, and nobody knows he's there.
Right. I mean, that's amazing. You would think that. Look, I've been with my wife a couple of times to these, you know, fitting rooms, as they call them. I think that's what they call them. And usually you have all the men sitting outside in the sofa talking about
that's
whatever.
Right.
And then you
that's
have the
right.
women who go in there and come out and show you the dress or whatever. But the one thing I know about the times I've been there is that there's always cashiers. So if you would think that the cashiers would remember that there was commotion in, you know, that room, and then they see this guy running out, you know, and some woman screaming. And not even a cashier remembers what happened that day.
Oh, yes, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous story, but they have a New York jury. And you know, probably all Democratic people who were told that this man did something awful, and he thinks he can get away with it because he's rich and famous. We're going to show him. Well, you know, the case is absurd. The ones down south are absurd. And the trouble is that they can possibly jam in a conviction before the election, and that could hurt him. You know, because the Democrats could say, can you really put a convicted man in the White House to be president of the United States? And the only argument Trump is going to say is this: we think this is going to be easily overturned on appeal, and that it's a disgrace to the country. It's using, and he might win. You know, if the Republicans are smart, which is, you know, not always the case, they wouldn't tell people to vote Republican. They would tell Democrats, do you want this kind of country? You don't have to vote for us. Just don't vote.
Right. Well,
stay
or
home.
Maybe Robert Kennedy can be the beneficiary of some of that.
Well,
I don't know.
He is.
Maybe he would, because he's being critical of all of this. If you've listened to Kennedy, he's being very critical of all this stuff, and maybe he can get some of those votes.
He has some silly ideas, but he has some good ideas as well.
By the way, speaking of Robert Kennedy, Bill, forgive me for interrupting you, but did you see the TV ad that he did or the commercial? He put out this unbelievable commercial talking about the way things used to be and the way they are now. He comes down pretty hard on everybody. And I thought one can question the credibility of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., and I think he exploited a little bit the image of his father and uncle in this ad.
Yes.
So we can quibble with that. But I think overall the message that we used to be great and now we're not, I think it's a good message.
It is a good message, and he is talking about a kind of greatness that we really lack today.
Yes.
And you know, one of the things that you look around and you say, well, what is the alternative? Who could be president of the United States? Now, in 1952, the Republican Party was a mess, and it was still an it still was run by isolationists and New York bankers, and they were going to run against Adlai Stevenson. They had been out of the presidency for 20 years, and they were smart enough to realize we're not going to make it with Robert Taft, who was the kind of the person everyone thought would be nominated. He was called Mr. Republican. He was brilliant, but he was basically an all-time isolationist. They didn't think they could win with him. So they knew they needed somebody who was against politics, somebody who could come in as the great man to save the republic, and they got him in Eisenhower.
Eisenhower
was one of those rare people who was above politics, who would clean up Washington, and that people could trust. And, of course, he was elected in a landslide. We don't have such a man today.
No,
we don't.
Because after Afghanistan, you know, there isn't really a great military hero. After
That's the
way we left Afghanistan and this General Milley and some of the silly things that he said, yeah, we don't have somebody like that. Maybe a Colin Powell could have done that, but he's not around anymore. So you're right.
Yeah,
we don't have...
Well, that's a very interesting story in itself, that the man that everyone expected would run for president and be elected was Petraeus.
Yes.
Because he was considered a great general, but he got himself into trouble. How did he get himself into trouble? Well, he shared classified information with his girlfriend, and he cheated on his wife. Who knew that? Who knew that?
Right.
I mean, it was as if they aimed right at him to take him out of public life, and they did.
They did, and what an amazing public life he had, because he was, you're right.
Yes.
I thought very highly of Petraeus, and I thought he would have a political future, but we didn't. Well, Bill, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and for coming back, and we hope that this gets back to our daily Monday routine, and we can talk a little politics, and now your readers at Urgent Agenda can hear your voice, and they can be relieved. You're back on the saddle, Bill. You're back on the saddle. You're on the pitcher's mound,
yeah.
You know, ready to go. Not quite 9 innings yet, but you can win the game.
No, I'm back. Of course, the pitcher's mound, being made up of the earth. Do we want to abuse the earth that way and produce more global warming? I wonder. I'll have to wonder about that. I'll think about it soon.
Well, you know, Bill, you can win the game with five innings these days. I mean, you can win.
That's right.
Technically, win a major league game if you go five. So
if you have a group of students riding for you, you might even go less than five innings and win.
That's right. That's right. So we'll let you go five innings today, and then I'll finish the rest of the game. I'll finish the last four innings for you, and we'll get you the W. We'll get you the W today.
Okay. Talk to you next Monday.
All right, Bill. It's a great honor to have you again, and great to hear your voice and hear your opinions as always.
Thank you very much. I look forward to our next program.
All right. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, great to have him, as I said, back on the saddle and talking about some very interesting stories. A lot of news today out of New York. Like Bill was saying, you know, President Trump had a couple of I think it was a victory for him to get that whatever it was reduced to at least a more reasonable number. And of course, the situation with Russia, a real problem. And this despicable vote in the UN where the United States abstains, I think that's the right word. We don't vote. And a resolution that criticizes Israel goes through. That's not what the United States is supposed to do, but that's... Unfortunately, what we did today, and I just, I'm angry. We shouldn't be pulling the rug like that from a strong ally named Israel. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.